We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. Colby, sorry we had to take a little bit of a hiatus last week. Had a little bit of a family emergency, but everyone's home safe now. Just had a little long weekend in the hospital, but everyone's on the mend, so we're back in business. But I do apologize to our listeners for missing a week. I hate doing that, but it's kind of a quickly moving situation, we'll call it, but we're back in business and got plenty to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to be back, and I'll apologize on the front end for my voice to the listeners. I don't know if you can tell, Carson, I'm going a little bit hoarse.
Have you been like screaming for the thunder at the TV or what?
No, I definitely could have been. I am sleep deprived because I've been watching Thunder games. I'm also a Colorado Avalanche fan, so I've watched games one and two of that series in Winnipeg, which started like 8:45, 9 o'clock. So I am a little bit sleep deprived, but no, this just started out of nowhere. Like 2 days ago, my voice just gradually started easing its way out. So I've got a glass of hot tea here with me with some honey in it. So I think we can talk about the fact that Oklahoma State is starting to put together a basketball roster. I think I can make it through.
Yeah, you're playing injured. You're hurt. You're not injured, so you can still play. So we appreciate you powering through. I'll try to do most of the heavy lifting here. Yeah, but this podcast is brought to you by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop. Be sure to shop at chrisuniversityspirit.com. We appreciate Chris's sponsoring the podcast as always. And again, if you're up in Stillwater for all the spring sports still going on, be sure to stop by Chris's. They'll hook you up with the latest, greatest Oklahoma State apparel, also accessories for your car. They got all kinds of stuff. Go in to Chris's and check it all out. Yeah, we've been kind of wondering what in the world the Steve Lutz era would look like in terms of a roster. A lot of things up in the air, just like most rosters when it comes to college basketball. But the first big transfer he has landed is Florida International's Arturo Dean. He committed to Oklahoma State this week. And Colby, just when you talk about Dean, obviously he averaged 13 points a game, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and 3.4 steals a game as a sophomore. I believe he led the country in steals. Just those are kind of his attributes as a defensive minded player. Steve Lutz said Arturo is a great young man from a great family. You don't get to 100 steals by accident. The number is a product of hard work, outstanding physical tools, and unrelenting will to win. So a very defensive minded guy that with steals, we talk so much about Lutz's pace of play being number one in the nation. There's a lot of attributes to get to there, Colby, but first and foremost, I think this is a really, really good addition for Steve Lutz, a quality addition, someone who'll step right into the starting lineup.
Yeah, I think so too. He's going to want to play fast, right? He's talked about wanting to play fast. In his introductory press conference, he said he wants to get a shot up within 12 seconds before that defense is really set and things get bogged down and gets hard to move both players and the basketball. So I think that getting Dean in here, you look at his stat sheet last year, he had three different games where he had double-doubles, and they all came with a different secondary stat. He had 19 points, 12 rebounds against Louisiana Tech. He had 10 points, 10 assists against Rice, and he had 13 points and a jaw-dropping 10 steals against Florida Gulf Coast. So kind of a Swiss Army knife. He's not a shooter, career 26% three-point shooter, so he'll let one fly every now and then, but not too often. That's not his forte, but getting up and down the court and being a Swiss Army knife in pretty much every other way. Also, we saw Lutz's team at Western Kentucky last year relied much more heavily on the two than on the three. So as far as a fit standpoint goes, seems like a guy who can play fast and who can do a lot of different things and can run the point some. So I really like this addition for Coach Lutz. Obviously, getting into the portal this late, right? It's almost May. You're having to work with what is there. And I think that this was a great get for Coach Lutz.
Yeah, he led the country in steals, 104. And you're right, I think he does fit. Doesn't take a lot of threes, which, again, that's not really a focal point of Steve Lutz throughout his tenure as a head coach. And it's interesting you mentioned the secondary stat with rebounds, assists, and steals. Like, that's a guy who's probably going to, at some point, put up a triple-double this coming season for Oklahoma State. So that really kind of illustrates his versatility that you mentioned. And we were kind of waiting around for another, like, more commitments to come. Well, that has happened. They do get Texas Tech transfer Robert Jennings to Oklahoma State. He spent the past 2 years at Texas Tech. He's 6'7", 230 pounds, played in 31 games. Marginal stats, you know, 4 points per game, 3 rebounds per game. Kind of a lunch pail type of role player is kind of the way you would classify him. Steve Lutz said, quote, "Every team needs a Robert Jennings. Great teammate, person, cares deeply about winning." All about work, work, work. He's from DeSoto. So a Texas kid, some of those Texas connections immediately paying off for Steve Lutz, but really kind of a roster filler, which you're going to have Colby with as many roster spots as they have.
Yeah, definitely a depth piece. He shot 0% from three last year because he doesn't shoot the three ball. I did watch some of the highlights that are posted. You can go to pistolfiringblog.com and check out this story that they posted about Robert Jennings. And he does look like a guy who can really get up and down the floor. And at his size, again, that should fit what Coach Lutz wants to do. I don't think you look at his stats that he's posted in his first 2 years at Tech, he doesn't strike me as a 25, 30-minute a night guy. But if he can give you 12, 15, 18 really solid minutes where he's getting out, playing good defense, running the floor, getting a couple easy baskets at the rim in transition, I think that that's what you're looking for from Robert Jennings. And like you said, it's about filling out the roster at this point with pieces that you think can be productive. And hopefully you get some of the guys back from last year's team. So between Dean and Jennings, I think it's a good start for Lutz after we've all been sitting around for a couple of weeks thinking, okay, we've got a coach. Do we have any players? And now finally they're starting to come out of the woodwork and the roster's starting to come together a little bit.
Yeah, and you mentioned some big pieces they're trying to get back. It's been an interesting week in terms of not only players currently on the roster, but players that used to be on the roster. For instance, there's been a lot of smoke about Musa Cisse, who we all remember, transferred in to Oklahoma State, the big man, transferred away back to Ole Miss. He's reportedly on campus. He's posted pictures on campus. He was photographed with Steve Lutz at I believe it was at the baseball game out at Obrate Stadium. And we're still awaiting word, which would be an interesting return, right? The guy has transferred, I think, every year he's been in college, but would seemingly really like Stillwater to come back and play for Steve Lutz. And you're still waiting, though, on Brandon
Garrison.
Sorry, I was reading about Musa Cisse and I completely lost his track there. Brandon Garrison, to me, Colby, like, sure, you'd love to have both. I mean, that certainly seems like it's a possibility, but I guess Garrison has posted pictures from the practice gym with a countdown until Sunday, as far as presumably when he's going to make his decision. But he posted a picture in Oklahoma State's practice gym. So you've got Cisse on campus. You still have Garrison on campus, although I think he's reportedly taking a visit to Arkansas, so his future is still up in the air. But Colby, if you were able to get Musa Cisse back in the fold and Brandon Garrison, like, that's the best big man tandem I can recall since I've been following Oklahoma State basketball. Now, they have had better big men individually, of course, but that's a pretty not only tall but really productive twosome that you'd have inside. I think the skeptic would say, wouldn't you only have, like, would both guys want to play together? That's the skeptic side of things, but it appears like Lutz is zeroing in on both of these guys and trying to get them both back to Stillwater.
Yeah, and maybe they would. You don't know because, again, Lutz wants to play fast, and his team last year at Western Kentucky relied a lot on twos and not on distance shooting, which I think you and I have said might be nice to kind of see the team get some easier baskets and not have to work so hard for everything offensively. Also, you know, I've been watching a lot of the NBA recently because the playoffs have started, and those guys are just so unbelievable with the way they shoot the ball from 22, 23, 24, 25 feet. It's unbelievable what they're doing. And you watch college basketball, a bunch of these kids, they can't shoot. They can't shoot, man. And we're just watching them throw up brick after brick after brick from beyond the three-point line. Let's get some easy baskets. And look, I think Garrison obviously is the priority. I think Garrison's an absolute stud. He had a good freshman year at Oklahoma State. You really don't want to lose him. You really don't want to lose him to Arkansas and Coach Cal over there now. But if you could get both of these guys, that'd be great. Even one to have some size in the middle. I mean, this team needs one of these guys there for some size, because without these two, am I correct in assuming that Robert Jennings would be the tallest player on the roster at 6'7", 230?
Yeah, I would think so.
I mean, that doesn't work, right? Not in the Big 12, not in Power 5 basketball. So you need one of these big guys, or you're going to have to go out and try to find another big guy, and then you might be bargain shopping at that point, right? So, yeah, Cisse posted a picture standing next to Bryce Thompson in center field the other night. Brandon Garrison has posted some cryptic stuff about his announcement coming. So fingers crossed that Oklahoma State winds up with both of these guys, but I think getting at least one of them is imperative just simply for the size.
Yeah, I do wonder if the plan from Lutz is to bring both of them in, or if he's bringing Cisse in thinking Garrison's gone. That's something we don't know at this point. I'm hopeful that you get both of them, because again, that would be one of the better big man tandems I can recall at Oklahoma State. I guess Q Williams has tweeted that he's making an announcement at 6 o'clock tonight. So we'll have some resolution as far as where Q Williams is going or if he's staying. This is going to be a pivotal, you know, few couple days for Steve Lutz. You're able to get a lot of these guys back in the fold, then I think you're really cooking with gas. But a lot of things are up in the air in terms of Steve Lutz. And I'd always heard that Garrison wanted to stay in Stillwater. I'd said that since the very beginning. I think if they take care of him in NIL, which I believe that they're doing so, I think there's a real chance Garrison comes back. He took a visit to Oklahoma. Did you find that weird, Colby? Like,
yes.
Porter Moser can't get anybody in the portal. OU fans are like completely up in arms at their lack of talent to begin with, and then the fact they've lost most of their roster and the fact they can't get anybody in the portal. And to me, Porter Moser just strikes me, he's like the exact inverse of Mike Boynton, whereas he's a complete opposite in that Moser proved he can coach with those deep runs he did at Loyola Chicago. He just can't recruit, whereas Mike Boynton could really recruit but proved he really couldn't coach. And I just think Moser's on the completely opposite end of the spectrum there. I could not believe that he would even be tempted to go to OU. Now, maybe they were throwing a bunch of money at him and that got him in there. We'll never know now, but that was strange to me.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll be curious to see where Keon goes whenever he makes his announcement, because these guys that played under Coach Boynton, you still want them to go somewhere and be successful if they don't wind up in Stillwater, but obviously you'd love for them to stay. Don't go to Norman. Don't go to Norman. That's not fun. Trace Ford did that. I would like an interesting candid interview for him to be completely honest about that experience, the way he was treated by fans, and what he would say to any players looking to go one way or the other. Obviously football is a bigger deal, but it would be a pretty big deal, I think, if Brandon Garrison wound up down in Norman. Now, not as much so since they'll be playing in the SEC next year, and good riddance to them. But still no love lost between Stillwater and Norman. So I thought that was odd, and I hope he doesn't wind up down there. Again, like you said, you said from the beginning that you heard that he wants to stay in Stillwater. And I really hope that that's the case, because I think with Coach Lutz's offense, he's just so athletic for his size. The way he can move, it just seems like a perfect fit for an offense that wants to get out and go. So I really hope that Brandon Garrison, if I had to pick from any of the guys who are still outstanding from last year's team to come back, the answer for me undoubtedly would be Brandon Garrison.
Yeah, no doubt. He is the crown jewel of this roster. So keeping him would be just absolutely critical. You ready to talk some football? Or is there anything else you're sticking out to you basketball-wise?
No, I think we pretty much hit it with basketball. Just curious to see when those announcements come down, and hopefully by this time next week we'll have a clearer picture of what the roster is going to look like, and hopefully there will be some big men on it.
Yeah, that would be crucial. And again, I think no matter who they get, this is kind of my final thought on it. Like, we're going to be evaluating the players they get. Some of them we won't know a whole lot about till we get to watch them play. I really am going to give Steve Lutz this first year as a complete grace period, because obviously with the NIL stuff, like, you're completely redoing the roster in year one. Now, that is one of the appeals with him. He's shown he can do that and win his first season at a new school with a new roster. But I'm going to be way more lenient on a first-year head coach than probably I ever have been when it comes to college basketball, due to all the things that are going on with the sport. So if he just has a mediocre season, I will be impressed based on, you know, the roster turnover he's having to do. But and really, Corey, there's only one way to go, and that's up, because Oklahoma State was so bad last year. But I just had this thought that I'm going to be way more lenient year one with Steve Lutz than I've ever been with any head coach at Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I think so too. Obviously, with the changing landscape of college basketball and the ability for an entire roster to just say, yep, our guy left, we're leaving too. I understand it. I think it's fair. It does put the new head coach in a difficult position, and he's going to do his best to put together a roster and come in and right the ship. But also, you have to put context around it and understand, like, not all coaching changes are created equally. For example, Bob Stoops steps down, Lincoln Riley takes over. He was handed the keys to a Ferrari. Steve Lutz is not being handed the keys to a Ferrari. He's being handed the keys to a nice, reliable Honda Civic. You know, this can be a real good car if you maintain it and you do some nice things with it, this can be a really good car. But yeah, I think that we'll both have a lot of patience with Steve Lutz. And I hope Oklahoma State fans will as well. And I do hope that they get some decent crowds next year, because this is the beginning of what is hopefully the rebuilding of Oklahoma State basketball. So I think it'll probably require a patience for a year, a couple of years maybe, and then it'll be time to start putting some wins on the board and putting a Big 12 contender together.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to see who he gets in the portal. We may have a big guest when it comes to Oklahoma State basketball, still waiting word back on that. But we will keep you updated, and should be an interesting podcast. Should we be able to put some of those things together? Back to spring football wrapping up. Of course, the football stadium's under construction, so no spring game. And then, Colby, it sounds like the talk out of Stillwater is they might be going away with the spring game entirely, which it's been no secret. Mike Gundy hasn't really liked them for years and years and years. He gave some really good quotes to the sellout crowd and Jenny Carlson, and basically the gist of it is he doesn't want to tackle fully to get guys hurt. And they can actually use a full practice instead. And this led to a big back and forth on the chamber about spring games and how they're not needed. And they're kind of a thing of the past. It doesn't really do a whole lot for the fans nor the team. And I understand Mike Gundy's rationale about not wanting to tackle fully to where you really can't even simulate an actual scrimmage or an actual game. I still think there's real value in a spring game with fans in the stands. Just if you've played any sports ever at a high level, certain guys can handle playing in front of a lot of people when the lights are on. Some people are better in practice when the pressure's lower and there's not people in the stands. And the example I always give is when I was a young TV reporter covering the OSU spring game, Zach Robinson and company were there. When Zach Robinson went over the sideline, Alex Kate runs onto the field, who, as you know, was a 4-star recruit everyone was really excited about. Couldn't play dead. I mean, had a pick six from his own 5 at one point in the game I'm referring to. And then this old guy who played professional baseball, who I knew back in high school, Brandon Whedon, comes in running an offense that completely does not fit him whatsoever, the Zach Robinson offense. Scores a rushing touchdown and generally just moves the offense far better than Alex Kate. And this is in front of crowds of people and when the lights are on. And without this spring game, for me to see that with my own eyes, I could tell right then there was 2 straight spring games that Whedon just played Kate completely off the field. And if we didn't have that, I would have no, like, we would all just say, oh, well, of course Kate's the backup. He's younger. He was the 4-star recruit. Of course, Brandon Whedon's the 3rd stringer. He's just this old baseball player just coming back to get a degree. But I saw with my own 2 eyes who the better quarterback was. That's why when Kate started the game against Colorado, I was like, they're doomed. Like, I've watched this guy play. Brandon Whedon's better. And what happened? He didn't complete a single pass to his own team. He completed more to Colorado. And the rest is history. So my point is, Colby, the spring game to me, I get the reasons why it's going away, but I hate it because it simulates a game atmosphere. It simulates an actual game, and it allows fans and media alike to learn about an unknown player that we've only read about and see him in a situation. Like, just look at the OU spring game. They get this transfer receiver from Purdue who no one knows anything about. He scores 2 touchdowns, and all of a sudden everyone's fired up about the offense. They're fired up about this new receiver. Like, I think that's additive to a football program, but I understand Mike's reasons, but my reasons as a fan and former media member, I rue the end of spring games because while they don't matter, they're really good samples for what a player can do in a real setting.
Yeah. I don't like to sit on the fence, but I agree with what you're saying. And I understand what Coach Gundy's saying. You don't want to get guys hurt, right? And I understand the desire to not get guys hurt, especially the guys the fans want to come see play. You go to a spring game, you want to see Ollie take a few snaps, you want to see Brennan catch a couple of passes, you want to see Bowman slinging around a little bit, the offensive linemen are out there, they're throwing blows in the trenches, all those things. I understand the rationale behind not wanting to get guys hurt, but I do think that there's value in having everyone walk in that day knowing that they're walking into Boone Pickens Stadium to play in front of people. This is not just your coaches and your teammates who are going to be seeing this. Everyone is going to be seeing this. This is public. And how does the, how do those guys prepare? What do they look like on the field? How do they handle things afterward, having conversations with players, how they felt in that moment? I do think that there's some serious value that can be added by just allowing players to experience that element of it in a situation where you don't have to go out and beat TCU with your season on the line, something like that. You know what I mean? So you always want to err on the side of keeping your roster healthy. And I totally understand Gundy's point, because how many seasons has he had derailed in his 20 years at Oklahoma State because, you know, they lose two offensive linemen at the end of September, and then they're just shook the rest of the year, or they lose two receivers and a running back, or they lose a safety and a pass rusher. I get it. It has happened several times to Mike Gundy's teams. But I do still think that there's a ton of value in seeing those guys play in front of people and how they prepare and who's up to the task. So I don't think that there is one right answer. And I think the reality is the guy who's making that decision doesn't love the spring game, and I guess does not feel that the benefit of having those players get that experience and being able to watch them go through that, he doesn't think that that benefit outweighs the risk of getting those players hurt on that day. And he's the guy making the decisions. And what did I say I was going to tell you last fall, Carson? And Gundy, we trust. I'm just going to defer to him on this one and hope everybody stays healthy. And with such a veteran-laden team, he already knows who's going to play well under the pressure next fall. So them going away entirely would be a bummer, but I understand his reasoning for doing what he's doing.
Yeah, and I'm certainly of the same opinion when it comes to Gundy making that call. I kind of rue the end of him for the reasons I listed. Adam Lunt kind of wrote this on the Chamber. See if you want to. He said, I think all of these things can be true. One, spring games don't add value for the football team. Two, spring games, the actual game, don't add value for the fans. Three, spring games don't add more fans, as most likely only existing fans attend. And four, spring games are a great excuse to go to Stillwater in the offseason and feel engaged with the new team. I agree with all of those, except don't add value for the football team. I just, again, I think a game-like situation is invaluable, especially when you're going to be playing some guys who haven't played at this level, in the Big 12 level, or even just college level. I think they do add value, but clearly Mike Gundy disagrees with me, but that's just kind of where I stand on it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that there is value. And again, like I said, he has clearly weighed over his tenure at Oklahoma State the rewards and risks for a spring game. And I think he just feels the risks outweigh the rewards.
Yep. So that's Mike Gundy's latest. Also, don't look now, Colby, but another reason that Mike Gundy listed this is he thinks it's better for recruiting. He said recruits prefer to watch a practice and their position coach and how they work more than a spring game. Well, you said in Gundy we trust, Colby, recruiting's going really well. They just flipped four-star quarterback Adam Schobel from Baylor. The quarterback is the number 203 player in the entire class of the 2025. His dad played tight end in the NFL, a really big get at the quarterback position. And Colby, just in general, OSU's doing really well on the recruiting trail so far. That's quite a turnaround from what we're used to seeing at Oklahoma State.
Yeah, it's been unreal to just log on to PFP and see these commitments and see what Oklahoma State is doing on the recruiting trail. And getting Schobel, that's a big deal, getting a four-star kid out of Texas who was committed to a Texas school to come up to Stillwater instead. And it just, to me, it shows what can happen when you just put a really good, fun season together and everyone is excited about your program. It is just totally what they did this past fall, it's totally re-energized everything around Oklahoma State football. You know, they lose to Baylor in the Big 12 championship a couple of years ago. And this kid, he commits to Baylor, and then all of a sudden, things don't look as fun at Baylor anymore. It looks like they're going backward a little bit under Coach Aranda. They've gotten worse since that Big 12 championship game. Oklahoma State, on the other hand, appears to be on the rise. Mike Gundy appears to have this portal and all these different things, NIL. It appears to all be figured out in Stillwater, and now all of a sudden, Schobel turns around and says, you know what? I think I'd like to go play quarterback up there. They look like they're having a lot of fun. So it's just a testament to what can happen when you really put it all together for a season. And this is now 2 out of 3 for Oklahoma State where they've put it all together, with 2022 now starting to look like the outlier. So Yeah, that's a big, big flip for Mike Gundy and Oklahoma State to get talent in that room. And it's just, I think, indicative of where this program is at right now. It's a program that, if we're looking at the stock chart, it would have a green bar pointing upward, whereas Baylor is red and it's going down. So I love that for Oklahoma State, and hopefully he ends up being the next star.
Yeah, that puts Oklahoma State to number 23 in the country, recruiting class-wise, number 4 in the Big 12. That's way more – that level ranking is way more where Oklahoma State should be with the level of success they've had not only this past year, but really under Mike Gundy's entire tenure. Schoble's from a small town in Texas, so he really kind of fell in love with Stillwater. How could you not? It's just a great college town in general, but if you're from a small town, it's big without being, you know, overwhelming. So that makes a lot of sense to me, and just – I just think, especially on the offensive side of recruiting, just the proof's in the pudding with Mike Gundy. Like, if you're a skill, if you're a wide receiver, like, Casey Dunn can just drop down his portfolio of production he's put together at that position. And even when it comes to quarterbacks, they've just had really productive offenses throughout Mike Gundy's entire tenure. So I always thought they should recruit at a high level, but particularly on the offensive side. So that's encouraging to see from Oklahoma State's recruiting side of things.
Real quick. Did you see the picture Schoble posted with Mike Gundy?
Was he where he was just towering over him?
Oh, my God. He makes Mike Gundy look minuscule. He makes Mike Gundy look so short. This kid's, what, 16, 17 years old? Probably 17 years old. And he looks a good 6 inches taller than Mike Gundy here, who's not totally – short in his own right. So he's listed at 6'5", but he's young. You don't know how much more he's going to grow. 6'5" is almost perfect. And he's listed at 190 pounds. Let him get a redshirt year under his belt with Coach Glass. I really like the idea of 6'5", 220. That is intriguing to me.
Yeah, he looks the part. You're right. He did dwarf dwarf Mike. One more note before we get to our toast of the week. Oklahoma State golf. They finished, third in the Big 12 standings at Big 12 championships. But kind of the big story, Colby, is Preston Stout finishes in a tie for first, taking home a Big 12 championship individually. So he shoots 67 in the third round to get 2 shots clear of the lead heading into that round. But the team aspect, they were just completely blown away by Texas. Texas won by a trillion shots. Oklahoma snuck up and took second above Oklahoma State. But I've been hearing things about this Preston Stout all year. He's been one of their best players all year. And he's a true freshman. I'm going to go out on a limb already, Colby, just with how good he's been already as a freshman, winning Big 12 championship medalist honors. This is the next PGA tour player at Oklahoma State. This Preston Stout kid's really impressive.
You're saying his game's pretty stout?
Exactly. Yes. Dad joke.
Yep, thanks. I'm my voice isn't too hoarse to get a good dad joke in there. Yeah, he had earlier this year, I believe he shot, I think it was a 62 down in Cabo, and that is what kind of turned me onto him. I was like, oh, okay, this kid's something worth watching. I'm friends with one of the Oklahoma State golf donors, and they said that he's supposed to be he's supposed to be that guy. And he goes out, and the putt that he made, did you see the video of the putt that he made?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh, it was – probably, I don't know, 35 feet from the front fringe. Didn't have a ton of break in it, but just you've got to get a start on line. Speed has to be perfect. And he poured it right in the middle as a freshman. Joins Ricky Fowler and Morgan Hoffman as the last two to have at least a share of the Big 12 title as freshmen. And that was 15 years ago when Morgan Hoffman did it in 2009. Ricky did it the year before. So, yeah, Preston Stout's going to be a guy to watch going forward. For those Oklahoma State golf fans who tweeted me, and I'm sure you get some, Carson, asking when the golf program is going to get back to what we saw in 2018, that's a really high bar. So you don't know when it's going to get back to that level. But I do think Allen Bratton will get it back to a point where they're a team that's in match play. You know, as a team like Oklahoma State, you should be in match play at the national championships. What, a third of the time? Is that reasonable?
I would say every year be in it. I mean, what's that, top eight?
Match play's top eight. College golf has gotten really good, and the talent has gotten much more evenly dispersed in an era now where Oklahoma State doesn't have all of the benefits it once had before other programs started to invest as heavily. So every year, top eight, I don't think is realistic. Maybe every third, something like that, I think is probably a more realistic expectation.
you do think Bratton's going to get him back? I mean, they were really hurt by Brian Stark going to Texas. He was in the top 10. And again, Texas finished 25 under. Oklahoma State finished 2 under. So they were 23 shots back of Texas. The gap's pretty wide right now. And I do have questions about Allen Bratton moving forward. I do. I mean, 2018 was amazing. Just all, the stars aligned for like one of the most ridiculous teams ever assembled. Hasn't been much since. I don't know the reasons for that. I don't know if NIL is playing a part in that. I do know Oklahoma State, much like Oklahoma State wrestling, deserves to be the number one team in the country, or expects themselves to be so. And so I do have questions. I mean, 23 shots back, that's tough. And they haven't really recruited all that great. I do wonder, you know, Allen Bratton is a holdover from Mike Holder. No dad joke, pun intended there. I do wonder if Chad Weiberg is looking at Allen Bratton. It's not the same as Mike Boynton, because it's completely apples and oranges, but a coach that is seemingly underperforming, that he didn't hire, for a program that has the highest expectations in the country. I do start to wonder that a little bit. You know, I mean, it's something I've been thinking a lot about, actually.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to argue with a ton of what you said there. Until recently, and maybe it is NIL, I don't know, but Oklahoma State was still a match play team until they had the disaster summer two years ago, where Chikara announced that he was coming back, and then the Saudis were like, hey, why don't you come play for us instead? And he's like, all right, cool, I'm a live golfer now. And Brian Stark was coming back, and then he wasn't. He went to Texas, and they lost Tiger Christensen the following summer, and he's now one of the top players in the country. So
where'd he go?
Arizona State, I want to say off the top of my head. Don't hold me to that, but I think he went to
Arizona. I mean, you're losing to your direct competition in Texas and Arizona State.
Yeah, and that is obviously problematic, and I don't know if there were more things that went into that. I heard some things that Stark just wasn't enjoying his college experience in Stillwater, and it had less to do with Bratton and the golf program than it did with him just not feeling like Stillwater was home. So, again, there are things that sometimes are out of your control as a coach, but I think Bratton, he definitely needs to get it turned around sooner rather than later. He is a national championship winning coach, and I think that he deserves a long enough leash to have time to overcome that disaster summer. Also, Carson Creek is currently undergoing a massive renovation and won't be open maybe for another year, something like that. So a little bit handcuffed there as well. So I think he deserves just a little bit longer leash to prove that he can get him back there. And if we're still sitting here in 2026, maybe another couple of years, and the golf program is still just kind of plateaued, then I think that becomes a very serious conversation.
I think that's totally fair. But again, Arizona State is coming into the Big 12. You lose Texas and Oklahoma, which were, you know, your two main competitors, but you gain an Arizona State. So that'll be kind of the new big rival when it comes to the golf program. But yeah, we'll see who Bratton adds. You're right. That is important to note. Chikara's unique proposition going to live, that certainly did not help things at all. So that's just kind of where my head's been at with golf. Again, I'm not calling for Allen Bratton's job by any means. This is like I talked about for the last couple of years with Mike Boynton, it's a results-based business, and the expectations of OSU golf are higher than OSU basketball. They just are. You got that facility you mentioned at Carson Creek, like the tradition, the history, but they do have a really good one in Preston Stout. That was an impressive putt to get in there for a tie for first at Big 12 golf. You ready for the Yuengling Toast of the Week?
Absolutely.
Let's get to the Yuengling Toast of the Week, brought to you by America's oldest brewery, Yuengling. Be sure to check out their traditional lager. Go pick some up myself this weekend at On Cue. That's my spot to go get some Yuengling. So we appreciate Yuengling sponsoring our Toast of the Week. As always, traditional lager is refreshing, and man, it's good. I've really taken to it. So be sure to check out some Yuengling next time you're either at the liquor store, grocery store, or your local gas station. So with that said, Colby, where are you going this week for your toast?
I was going to go Preston Stout, but I've got an audible. How about a toast to Mike Gundy and Mark Daigneault? This is the coaching friendship that I didn't know I needed in my life. Mike Gundy.
Bromance.
It absolutely sounds like a bromance. I'm reading this quote from Mike Gundy. He called and asked if he could start coming to practice one day. Gundy tells him, come on. They had a good conversation. And Gundy said that they've stayed in touch on the phone and have built a distance relationship. And it just sounds like these guys are just texting each other, calling each other. He says they've talked on the phone over spring break. They talked for quite a while about some things, and he's really enjoyed getting to know him. He's a smart guy. The bromance between Mike Gundy and Mark Daigneault is the relationship I didn't know I needed. I obviously love Mike Gundy, and I love Mark Daigneault. I think the Thunder kind of just fell into what I think might be one of the best coaches in the NBA. I was watching some film breakdown on some things that the Thunder do where they put three guys on the baseline, you get the screen out high, and it puts the defense in a position where they just can't possibly guard all these guys. And without a true big man, he has found ways to make the youngest team ever to be the West one seed in the West. They get pushed in game one, they look testy, and then in game two, they come out and dominate. It's just Mike Gundy and Mark Daigneault being buddies. I didn't have it on my bingo card, and I absolutely love it.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, Daigneault's an amazing coach, but that's the bromance I didn't know I needed either. It's just, you know, two kings hanging out. Daigneault doesn't strike me as someone who will go rattlesnake hunting though.
Good point. No, I think that he's too busy studying the NBA challenge timeout rules.
Yeah, he's good at those, even though he got kind of hosed the other night because they called it a certain way during the regular season and then didn't call it that way in the playoffs. But Thunder are rolling. That's fun to see. My toast of the week is going to go to Steve Lutz / Keaton Page, but Steve Lutz retains Keaton Page. And Jeremiah Johnson reaffirmed his commitment to Oklahoma State after the coaching change for men's basketball. And in the article on Pistols Firing from Marshall Scott, he talks more about Keaton Page than he does Steve Lutz. So that shows you the level of impact that Keaton Page has had within the state of Oklahoma and recruits from Oklahoma. He talks just glowingly about Page being retained. That's one big reason why he stayed. He also likes the community. But I think it was a really smart hire by Steve Lutz to retain Keaton Page because it's already paying dividends by keeping Jeremiah Johnson committed to Oklahoma State.
Yeah, big time. I thought that article, I read those quotes too, and I was like, wow, this is some serious Keaton Page love right here. And we talked about it whenever Coach Lutz kept him on. Like, he has to know everybody in this state, right? I mean, he came up Pawnee Pistol, obviously. Then he plays Oklahoma State. Now he's coached here for, I mean, how long ago was his career? 10, 12 years? I don't, off the top of my head, 10, 12?
Maybe. Probably like 12 years ago, yeah.
15 years ago? I don't even remember now. Time flies. But, yeah, he's got to know everybody in the state by this point. And he just seems like a totally likable guy. I've met him once. It was a long time ago. So I don't know him personally, but just seems like a really likable guy. And those quotes in that story that you mentioned were just like, wow, look at Keaton Page holding it down for the big-time in-state recruit. So that was definitely cool to see.
God, I covered his senior year of high school at the Big House, winning the state championship. I'm really old. Can I pour one out?
Absolutely. For the Atlanta Falcons?
That's where I was going. How'd you know?
Oh, I was making a joke, but that is fantastic. I love to talk about this.
I'm literally pouring one out for the Atlanta Falcons, who our guy Zach Robinson is mixed up in this. Don't do this to our Zach Robinson. I hope this wasn't Zach's call because they pay Kirk Cousins $180 million, 100 of which is guaranteed. And then they draft Michael Penix at number 8 overall. I mean, not only is Penix viewed as a fringe first rounder, you don't trade down. You take this guy who's going to presumably sit for 2, 3, 4, however long Kirk Cousins stays healthy, which I know has been challenging for him. It just was GM malpractice to waste an asset of that caliber when Atlanta's trying to make the playoffs. They haven't made the playoffs since they lost to Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. I just thought it was probably the worst draft pick I can ever remember, given the circumstances of where their team's at, where they were picking, who they just paid. Their GM sits up there and tries to compare it to the Jordan Love deal for Green Bay. Green Bay had won 13 games the 2 years prior. They were picking in the late 20s as well. And they had Aaron freaking Rodgers. And they didn't just sign $180 million. And there was a funny clip circulating of Arthur Blank, the owner, kind of talking very animatedly to the GM after the pick was made. Did you know, Colby, that owner, Arthur Blank, had to literally put $100 million into escrow for the guaranteed salary they're about to pay Kirk Cousins. So he just wrote a check for $100 million to put in escrow to watch his GM, the big brainiac he is, take Michael Penix at number 8 overall, who I like. I like him a lot. He looked great against Texas, but he's had two two ACLs, two shoulder surgeries. He's 24. He'll be 28 when Kirk Cousins' contract's up. This makes no sense at any level. It's the worst NFL draft pick I can remember.
I was dumbfounded. My wife actually made fun of me last night. We were sitting on the couch. My daughter, who's two now, weirdly was loving the draft. I think she liked seeing all the families clap after the picks because she would clap and holler, yay. It was the cutest thing. We were having a blast watching the draft, and the Falcons are on the clock at number 8. And I was so stunned by this. Carson, off the top of your head, do you know who the Falcons' number 2 wide receiver is?
Well, Drake London would be one. I don't know.
Exactly. It's not Roma Dunze, who was on the board at 8. What are you doing? He's going to get fired, right? Terry Fontenot, I think, is his name. That's how bad this is. I didn't know his name prior to last night. You don't want to be the GM that every team around the country knows your name because of the pick you made on draft night in a negative way. Terry Fontenot knows his name. He's not long for this world.
No, that was just, and look, there's a theory behind this that, you know, teams have really started to invest in backup quarterbacks. I think the last 2 years, each year, more quarterbacks have played than the history of the NFL. This year was even more crazy with injuries and stuff. So, like, I get investing in a backup quarterback like the Eagles did. They used a second round pick on Jalen Hurts. It's a second round pick, not the number 8 overall. Teams are getting smarter in how they invest in their backup because they will probably end up playing at some point with the way concussion rules are, especially. But this ain't it. Like, if you're going to take a developmental rookie to sit behind Kirk Cousins, why don't you take Kirk Cousins Jr., who's a little more mobile, and the McCarthy kid, who's the youngest player in the draft, who won't be 28 when Kirk Cousins deals? It made no sense. It doesn't make any sense on any level, but that's kind of their argument, I guess.
I'm so glad that you went to that, because I thought about bringing that up and I was like, we don't have to touch on that today. And I'm so glad you were going there, because I needed a platform to make fun of the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah. And again, I'm no McCarthy guy. If your team doesn't trust you to throw a pass for 3 quarters, I'm amazed you go in the top 11 of the NFL draft. That blows my mind. But hey, NFL team's going to keep doing NFL type stuff. So, no real Oklahoma State ties there in the first round, probably not much throughout the draft. So, that'll do it for me. Colby, you got anything else before we get out of here?
I don't believe so. I'm going to go drink some more hot tea.
All right. Sounds good, brother. And, we'll get back with you next week.
Absolutely. Thanks everyone for listening. As always, go Pokes.